You're listening to the Boss Yourself First podcast, Season 2, Episode 2. If you want to be an effective leader, the first person you want to lead effectively is yourself. Self-leadership helps you create better relationships and a more fulfilling life, and in turn, lead others in a more authentic and impactful way. If this piques your interest, then stick around. I'm Robin White, your host, and this is Boss Yourself First. Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 2 of season 2 of the Boss Yourself First podcast. I hope you're having a fantastic week. So, question for you. What is your normal right now? I mean, you keep hearing all this talk about when we get back to normal, or how normal's never coming back. It's going to look very different, even when the pandemic ends, just because of what we've learned. So my question is, what is your normal right now? Have you settled into a pandemic rhythm? At our house, we have, for the most part. I mean, my youngest was in school. She chose the hybrid model. She's in high school. She's a senior this year. So we had the choice. She chose the hybrid model, which meant she was in school a couple days a week. And then that lasted through November, which we were pretty excited about, the fact that we got to go that long. And then it went all online. And next Monday, she goes back to the hybrid model. So it started the second semester also online. And now they're going to go back in person on the hybrid model. So it's just kind of finding that rhythm again, and resetting. The other three of us who live in the house are all working from home, so we do have a rhythm. We kind of get up, we go to our separate spots and get busy, and then when lunchtime rolls around, we kind of reconnect. We all have lunch together, which is honestly pretty refreshing. I don't think I was so disciplined about taking a lunch break before the pandemic and before there were other people in the house to have a break with. So that's our rhythm. Then we all go back to work, and then we kind of reconvene for dinner. You know, the rest of life is just kind of chugging along. My youngest, again, is finishing up her college applications, which is exciting. Then it's just waiting. We've already heard back from one school, so yay, she does get to go to college. She got into that one, and we're just waiting to hear back on the others to see where she'll actually land. My husband's busy season is wrapping up while mine is winding up, but that's okay. He's really great, and we shift the household responsibilities around according to who's got the heavier work schedule at the time. My youngest grandson is teething, which means my oldest daughter has her hands full. But you know, we all have our rhythms. We've kind of found our way, and I'm hoping that you do too. You have your rhythms in place, but sometimes that's perfect. It gives us a little bit of rest. In fact, we had to reset the rhythms when the pandemic began, and finding those rhythms helped us feel a sense of normalcy and control. And now it's been kind of steady for a while. And the problem with getting into a rhythm that chugs on for a long time is that we get kind of comfortable and we can lose energy on our goals. And we need a little something to wake us up and engage us and help us move forward towards our objectives. And that's part of self-leadership. That's recognizing when it's time to re-energize, when it's time to find a rhythm and to settle in for a little bit of rest, and then when it's time to get up and get out there and get moving forward on those goals. I think this is a great time to have this conversation, as you know, we're fully into the first quarter of the year now, and I don't know whether you set resolutions or not. If you're like me, I set out a yearly vision. And then I break that into quarterly checkpoints. So we start strong and we get into the rhythms of the new year, and then we kind of lose motivation and interest. At least some of us do. Okay, let's be real. At least I do sometimes. And I've seen this in my clients as well. That's part of the support work I do as a coach, is helping them reconnect and stay connected with their goals and their vision and stay motivated and interested. All right, well, this season we're talking about something that can help when we get settled into our comfort zone, and that something is constraint. Yes, you heard me, constraint can help wake you up, and when you connect it with strong motivation, you can slingshot forward toward your goals with new energy and new perspective, creative thinking, and bold actions. Now, I'm getting a little ahead of myself because we're only on the second episode of the season, but I want you to grab hold of the rewards of doing this work with constraints. On episode one, we talked about how we're defining constraint, and we looked at examples of how constraint can be leveraged. We even started playing a little with constraint, with our very own constraint challenge, which I still would love to hear more about that. I've heard from a few of you around taking that challenge, and you can listen to episode one if you want to hear exactly what that challenge is. It's never too late to take the challenge. So this week, I want to focus on the cycle of processing constraint. We talked about it last week, but as a reminder, our book for this season is A Beautiful Constraint by Mark Barden and Adam Morgan. And if you want the BYF reading schedule, you can visit the Boss Yourself First Facebook page, and we'll be talking about the readings inside the Facebook group, so the Boss Yourself First Facebook group. But if you just want to read along and you want to have some kind of page goals so that you get it completed through the season, go ahead to the Facebook page for Boss Yourself First and grab hold of that. It's already posted there. So remember last week when we combined a couple of definitions, including one from A Beautiful Constraint, to define constraint as a limitation or defining parameter imposed by outside circumstances or by ourselves that can stimulate creativity and innovation. So I want to talk to you about the cycle of processing constraint, and I want each of us today, my kind of goal for each of us today, is to figure out where we are in the process of dealing with a constraint. In Morgan and Barden's book, they identify three stages of processing constraint. And I love this because it removes the idea that we do this work and we will automatically feel great about working with constraint, that we have arrived. It's not a destination. It is definitely a process. And so I love the idea that they sort of define these stages of processing constraint. And so here are their stages. The first one is victim. The second one is neutralizer, and the third one is transformer. And they break down transformer into two like little subgroups, which we'll talk about in just a minute. It kind of reminds me of the stages of grief, but as I thought it over, it's a little more like using a slingshot, sort of the steps if you broke that down. Stage one being the rock, putting the rock in the sling, and the sling is pulled back tighter and tighter, creating tension. And then you have stage two, and that's that time while you're aiming, but you're not adding or taking away from that tension. It's just kind of there. And then stage three, the release of that sling, flinging that rock, and it creates so much energy and momentum, shooting it towards the target. And to me, that's a nice analogy for these stages of processing constraint. So let's break it down a little more, unpack it, and talk about the victim stage. So as I do, maybe you don't nerd out on words, but I nerd out on words. I really like to understand. Sometimes I even get into the etymology, but I really like to get a good definition. So Cambridge Dictionary defines a victim as someone or something that's been hurt or damaged or killed or has suffered, either because of the actions of someone else or something else, or because of illness or chance. And I really liked grabbing hold of that definition. And it seemed to me as I worked through it, the key to identifying a victim, according to this definition, is being hurt or held back by something other than yourself. And I do a lot of work with clients, and almost always, and I find it in myself too, I'm not trying to point fingers, but almost always there's a place where we're looking to blame someone else or something else for something, and it can even become a habit, this becoming a victim. That's not exactly the direction that Barden and Morgan take, because that's not really their focus. They're just trying to help you see the stages and the processes. So a victim is someone who believes that their circumstances, it's not due to their own choice. It's beyond their control. And I don't want to give a negative connotation to victims. Victims are for real. Blameless people get caught in damaging circumstances every day. However, no matter what the circumstance, aside from catastrophic circumstances that result in immediate death, we get to choose how we respond. That's part of our human power, is that response choice. And we talked about this in season one in emotional agility. In fact, let's go back to our friend Viktor Frankl from season one. And that space between stimulus and response is where we choose to stay a victim or we choose to move forward, which in this conversation is the next stage, which is neutralizer. But before we jump into defining that, let's be really clear on how Adam and Morgan are defining victim, because I gave you the Cambridge Dictionary definition, and I want to put it in the context of constraint. Now, I've already mentioned that the stages are victim, neutralizer, and transformer, and each definition is a progression of how a person or company adjusts their ambition when confronted with a constraint. And remember, it's a process depending on the severity of the constraint. For example, how many of you, when the pandemic first started shutting things down and schools closed, paused most of your activities, some because you had to, and some because you couldn't tear yourself away from the news? You watched the news. That, for me, I soon realized that the news perpetuated my victim feelings, and I moved on to comfort food and binge watching the Great British Baking Show. And that could only go on so long before that behavior was not paying my bills or educating my children or serving my clients. So I moved from there to figuring out new ways to accomplish my priorities. And here we are eventually with a podcast, and I'll unpack that a little more later on. And I found with myself and with my clients that we each have our own rate of working through that process. Okay, back to Adam and Morgan's definition of victim. Remember, a victim is a person who, when confronted with a constraint, they lower their ambition. So they adjust the ambition. So referring back to my example, when things shut down, I lowered my ambition to watching television and eating whatever I craved. It was a pretty low bar. But the next stage is neutralizer. So for this stage, when a person is confronted with constraint, they keep their original ambition, but look for a different approach to fulfill that ambition. For me, that meant team trainings on Zoom instead of in person, and rearranging the rooms in our home to accommodate learning and working for four people. We joked about having the university in the dining room and a coaching company in the office, a high school in the upstairs bedroom, and a consulting firm in another bedroom we converted into an office. And that takes us to the third stage of processing constraint. And that stage is the transformer, which Morgan and Barden define as a person who, when dealing with constraint, sees it as an opportunity, even increasing their original ambition. Now, I'm going to break with my dealing with the pandemic illustration to a different constraint that I dealt with in 2019. This was a health constraint, and I'm sharing this because I know many of you have health constraints. And this is kind of my story around that. In early May of 2019, I contracted a serious respiratory virus with violent coughing that lasted well into July. I tore up my rib and abdominal muscles, and it was exhausting. I was exhausted all the time just from coughing. In June, this manifested in a way that caused my airways to suddenly close, where I couldn't breathe or talk to explain what was going on. I thoroughly stressed out one of my daughters and my husband, trying to help me when I couldn't actually explain what was going on. And now it did relax a little bit as I was starting to see spots, and I was staggering around trying to get I have an exercise-induced asthma inhaler, and I was starting to see the spots, and I managed to get a puff in, and it relaxed just a little bit. It was enough to let me get some air. And we followed that experience up with a trip to the ER in case it happened again, because we didn't really understand what had gone on. Well, that began a series of steroids and misdiagnosis and medications that continued through September. And during that time, I lost my voice. It would work intermittently, but I had to suspend my client work because I never knew when I could count on it. Eventually, after a lot of doctor's visits and a lot of medications, we got a diagnosis that seemed to capture what was going on, and it was called something I'd never heard of before, paradoxical vocal cord dysfunction, which apparently can be triggered by a really vicious virus. And the treatment was vocal therapy. So finally, in November of 2019, I was on the mend, and my voice was becoming a little more stable. It even still today has its moments, but that was just the kind of the beginning of the journey of healing, and it's continuing, hopefully, to get stronger and stronger. And I bring this up because not speaking was a constraint I never considered facing. I had been a singer and a performer and, of course, a coach, and part of my recovery involved not trying to talk or whisper, which apparently is really bad for your vocal cords, for a few weeks just to let my throat heal. And we quickly found out that I am most often the instigator of conversations in our household. It got real quiet around here. However, during this quiet time, I began writing my book. I had to go through the process, but eventually I got to a place where I refused to believe that I couldn't support others with my work, so I wrote it out. And in working on the book, I realized that I wanted to play with the concepts a little bit more. And so I started the podcast to continue to grow and explore self-leadership. And another advantage of the podcast is I can record when my voice is strong. So my ambition actually expanded because of my voice constraints. Now remember, I told you that Barden and Morgan actually divided the transformer stage into two categories, and those are responsive transformers, where a person or company is responding to a constraint as an opportunity for new solutions, and the proactive transformers, who actually impose constraints to catalyze a better approach or solution. And we talked about, last episode, we talked a little bit about a couple of writers who did that, imposing constraints. So now, my challenge for you is to think about a constraint you've faced or are currently facing. Can you see these stages in the process? And there's no judgment here. Remember, I said we all have our different rates at which we process things. And we each deal with different ambition and different constraints at different speeds. I'm going to leave you with a quote from Morgan and Barden in their book, A Beautiful Constraint. Moving from victim to transformer will require strength in mindset. Do you believe it's possible? Method. Do we know how to start doing this? And motivation. How much does it matter to us? I think those are great questions to consider this week. First, do you believe constraint can be leveraged for an advantage so much that you're welcoming it and considering it beautiful? Second, does it matter to you? Do you care enough to do the work of learning to leverage constraint for advantage? Is the cost worth the reward? And last, do you know how to do it? How to move forward with the power of constraint? And that's what we're here learning, and that's why Barden and Morgan wrote their book, so that if we don't know, we can figure it out. And if you stick with me this season, we'll figure it out together. Hey, I hope you're enjoying our second season of the Self-Leadership Podcast. We learn and reflect and challenge ourselves to become the next better version of ourselves. And we're not doing it just to serve ourselves. It's not a sort of myopic view that we're developing, but to make the world a better place, one leader at a time. If you are enjoying this and getting value from the work, please take a few minutes and leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. I'd really appreciate it. And if you haven't already done so, you are invited to subscribe to the Mind Your Monday newsletter to be the first to know all the BYF happenings and to expand on what we're doing here on the podcast. Also, I'd love to hear about your self-leadership journey and your wrestling with constraints. You can find me on the Boss Yourself First Facebook page, Instagram, or LinkedIn. I hope you reach out and connect, and I hope you have a great rest of your week. Until next time, take care. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you found something to grab hold of and apply in your life. As always, any link or information mentioned in this episode can be found at bossyourselffirst.com in the podcast section. And if we haven't connected yet, and I would love to, DM me on Instagram at bossyourselffirst or come to the Boss Yourself First Facebook page and let me know how you're doing and what you think. I would really love to meet you. Thanks for being here and being you. Now get out there and lead with courage and kindness and boss yourself first and add your amazingness to the world. We sure need it. Talk to you soon, my friends.